Let's make it happen, Captain!
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. Happy to have you. Gov, how you doing, brother?
Oh, good. I'm sleep deprived. I think you're pretty sleep deprived.
Yes.
Over the weekend, I had a grand total of like 6 hours of sleep over 4 days.
Nice.
I'm tired.
Nice. It's that time of year. So, yeah, I was ready to go take a nap while you were fixing my Surface Pro this morning, so that was nice. I appreciate that.
This is a weird, weird issue.
Yeah, what was my error, by the way?
So, okay.
So, for everyone to know, I got a thing that popped up that said...
This is for our internal IT deployment. Yeah. He's got a Surface Pro 1 with still running Windows 8, and our IT department pushes out the update to Windows 8.1.
Yeah.
And it was a weird error in the upgrade.
Yeah, the upgrade wouldn't go.
Wouldn't go, because there's a block in place to have the correct version of the firmware.
Yeah.
For people that might not know, there was very, very, very old pre-August 2013 firmware that if you had BitLocker installed and enabled, there'd be some weird issues if you tried to upgrade to 8.1. So, you know, we pushed out later firmware, and then everything is fine. And he was running firmware from February. No frickin' idea how he was running firmware from February 2013, so over a year old.
Yeah.
And
see, as I'm getting things done. Yeah.
That machine was flaky, man. He had some weird stuff installed there.
It was a spare. I'm on the Lenovo now.
Anyways, so in order to fix him to get the firmware updated, you have to actually uninstall all the firmware. I can actually show you what I'm talking about here. You go to Device Manager. This is a Surface Pro 3. It's basically the same under any of the Surfaces, and other systems out there also use firmware, not a lot of them, but most UFI-based machines do. So if you go into firmware, you see all these Surface Pro firmware components,
yeah.
Capsules. So in order to fix him up, you have to right-click and uninstall all of them, reboot, and then what you have to do is go and get the Surface driver package. Driver pack. Straight from Microsoft.com.
Nice.
And you just choose download, and then you pick the thing that you want. And then for him, it was the March 2014 pack. Mm-hmm. Really, you needed anything past August in order to get past this particular block. And as you can tell, there's Surface Pro 2 and Surface Pro 3 packages as well. So for those of you out there that have bought Surfaces, Surfi.
All right.
Not quite sure what the plural is.
No worries.
It's always a good idea to have a backup of the latest driver package, just in case if you're ever offline or you have an issue and you need to update the drivers.
Yep.
I like to keep a backup. For those of you that don't notice, I'm rocking the Surface Pro 3.
Nice.
I consider it the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah. If I had that, I'd be using that.
Yes.
Rather than the Lenovo.
It is. It is really, really cool.
Yeah.
I have replaced all of my machines, essentially, with this. It runs VMs.
Yeah.
There is one caveat, however, because this is a connected standby machine, mm-hmm. For people that haven't heard this already, connected standby is the feature by which systems don't go it really ever into a full off state.
Yep.
So, you know, your Lenovo, for example, you have sleep, you close the lid, and you'll have, you know, the blinky power button, right? That's a higher power state than a connected standby state. Mm-hmm. And then there's hibernate, in which case it saves everything to disk and it actually powers off. Connected standby devices, by default, do not support hibernate. So, you know, if you go to the settings, power, all you have is sleep, shutdown, restart.
Mm-hmm.
Shutdown is, of course, a hiber boot, so it's actually a hibernation, and then log off, hibernate, and then power off. Sleep is connected standby. So the issue with this machine, the Surface Pro 3s, they're connected standby capable. Surface Pros and Surface Pro 2s were not connected standby capable, also known as instant on. If you're running Hyper-V, then you lose the ability for connected standby, and you have to turn off hypervisor in order to do that.
Yeah.
But you still get Hibernate. So frankly, I don't really consider that a kind of a killer issue for me. Mm-hmm. It's like when I'm running hypervisors, it's like, oh, okay, if I'm shutting down the machine, I just, you know, hit the power button, which I'll have set to Hibernate, and then I don't have to worry about it. It's in my bag, and it just doesn't draw power.
Yeah.
So that's really the only minor niggling issue about the Surface Pro 3, but like I said, it's super minor.
Yeah. So is yours the i7 or i5?
i5.
Yeah. Because the i7's not out yet, right?
Correct.
But I thought, you know, being Gove,
nope.
might have something.
I ain't that special.
Yeah.
But
you have had this device for a long time. You just couldn't use it on the show because it was early on.
Right. So, like I say,
so
this
you are special. You're just not special enough to get a i7. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get to questions from Andre. I use the tool Tree Size Free to detect folders which waste space on my SSD. Drive C found on this folder is C users Andre app data. And I pronounce that completely wrong. App data.
Data.
Data?
Data.
Okay. Local Microsoft Windows notifications. I just have to say everything wrong from how you say it. It includes a hidden folder with a GUID with over 20,000 small JPEG pictures. So for what are the files used for, and is it safe to delete them?
They're used for the Windows push notifications. So if you go to your start screen, for example, you know, for the store.
Yeah.
It updates the tile, background tile updating for various applications that you might have installed and then mm-hmm. pinned to the main start screen here. That's essentially what they're used for, is just the push notifications. The problem is you can't just straight out delete them because there's a relatively complex mechanism of caching involved. And you don't really want to get into a torrent state. The best thing that you can do if you don't want that is just turn off the live tiles. That'll turn off the push notifications, and then you should be golden.
Okay. From John, I've started listening to your podcast. Great, by the way. And on one of the recent ones, you had a question about easy ways to get into safe mode. Just so I let you know that you missed one, which is by far the easiest, which is to hold down shift while you restart your machine.
Shift doesn't always work.
Yeah.
And really the point about shift is not about safe mode, but about not running things in your startup group.
Yeah. I was wondering about that because I remember holding down, it was left shift, right? It wasn't just the right
on
shift.
On a 104 keyboard, 104 key keyboard, it was usually the left shift.
Yeah. And but I wasn't
you can
sure
never
if
guarantee
that worked
that
anymore.
For disabling of the startup groups, that still works.
Yeah. Okay. All right, well, there you go. You could try left shift. All right, from Toby, can I remote desktop across the internet with IPv6?
Yes.
Done. From Andre, is it possible to install an older version of a store app on the Windows Store?
Nope.
Done. From David, I was just curious, what do you guys do for creating strong passwords, and how do you keep them sync across your machines? I'm struggling to keep unique passwords and remembering them all with websites in particular. So this was a very long answer for me, and then you came back with another very long answer. But I would defer to the two people that I consider my highest rung security experts other than Gove, and that is Mark Rusinovich and Paula J, who has a last name that's unpronounceable, but you know who I'm talking about. And I asked them both at TechEd North America, what do they use for keeping their passwords? Mm-hmm. Mark Rusinovich said he used RoboForms or RoboForm, and that will even suggest a very difficult password for you if you like. And I forget what Paula said, but I'm pretty sure it was 1Password.
Mm-hmm.
And then she.
And what do you do?
I don't even want to talk about what I do. What do you do? Let's
start with Gove. No, I want to hear yours
first. I keep
mine
in a text file that's sitting on my desktop. No, I'm just kidding. Now, I do...
For those of you that can't see me, it is me doing...
The
Harry Carey move.
Yeah. It probably would kill you to know that I would do something like that. But no, what I do is... first of all, I don't write any of my passwords down, but I have... 3 or 4, maybe 10, maybe 1,000 different, very strong.
So he's got 3.
too. So I have some very strong passwords that I use. Mm-hmm. And then I flip combinations of those passwords around. So mm-hmm. like on one site, I might, let's say password A, which is complex, password B and C. Mm-hmm. It might be C-A-B, it might be B-C-A, it might be C-B-A. Mm-hmm. You never know. So I use different combinations of strong passwords. And so that's basically what I do. And I just don't write them down. I do have a file at home, though, mm-hmm. That I keep encrypted with Safehouse, PC Dynamics Safehouse, that does have like all the old passwords I used to use for websites, though. So there is that.
I don't tend to use passwords. I tend to use passphrases.
Yeah.
And I tend to associate them with how I feel about where I'm going. So, for example, if I was on Facebook, I might have my password being, the only reason why I'm here is because my wife made me.
Okay.
That might be my password, right? But I, like I say, I tend to associate.
Are you on Facebook?
I'm not on Facebook.
All right. I was going to say,
and
I
no,
would
that's
add
not
you.
My password.
Yeah, if I would add you, so.
Right. Okay. That's kind of how I tend to do it. Each and every website is going to be a different password.
Yeah.
Each and every website, because of the service that I use, has a different sign up email that's associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
That sign-up email will get funneled via rules into an actual email that I check, so I can do website verification. You know, when you do stuff like that. So it's very, very specific. So any compromised site that I basically, the way that I live is any site anywhere out on the net, I have to assume is compromisable.
Yeah,
and that's basically how I live. I'm a paranoid freak sometimes.
A little bit. I've noticed that.
Right.
People say things.
So, and that's why people use things like 1Password or RoboForms in order to put in a complex password,
yeah.
right? And for each and every website, I never actually put in correct information. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you have the ones that are like your first pet or, you know, the street that you lived on
yeah.
or your birth date or stuff like that.
Drives me crazy.
No, it's never the same information.
Yeah, and I'm always putting things in there that is just abjectly incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I go to use those, I'm like, oh, what would I have put in there?
No, but again, the great thing about it is you can put it in that's associated with, again, how you feel, perhaps associated
yeah.
with that website. You could do cipher things like on the form in which it is putting it in.
Yeah.
You can always say, I'm always using the third word in on this particular field, right? And that's the entry. So that you can mm-hmm. do things that are mnemonics when you actually go and have to fill it out
yeah.
or remember what it is. So it's like nobody's going to be able to guess that yet. It's always going to be different for every
and
site.
And you can always find it out if you have to.
Exactly.
We do something similar to that with the studio password in the studio here. And I won't get into the details of what's going on there. But any one of us can come in. If the password was changed, we can figure it out.
Right, exactly. And that's kind of how you have to do it. Is stuff that is associated with you and what you're doing, your mindset, or with a group of people,
yeah.
right, that nobody on the outside would even be able to ponder what the
yeah.
What the relationship is.
Yeah.
Right?
But one of the main reasons that I wouldn't use RoboForms and have it suggest some weird password is then I know I'm going to go to some random machine
mm-hmm.
and I don't have it installed. I guess I could use the site if I kept it up in the cloud, but when I installed RoboForms to test it out,
mm-hmm.
I just couldn't stick all my passwords up in the cloud.
Is there a phone client for RoboForm?
I don't know if there is or not.
Because, I mean, that would be a
yeah.
way of syncing it, right? Again, I'm a big proponent of information that you can associate.
You have a triage meeting here.
I do have a triage meeting.
Get going. Okay, next question. I have an external monitor connected to my laptop, and I put my laptop to sleep whenever I'm not using it. But upon resuming, all the windows that were on the desktop and my secondary monitor moved to my primary monitor. Note that it was only the windows on the desktop that moved. Any apps such as Skype stayed on the secondary monitor.
When your machine came back up, did it, was the second monitor on when your machine came back from sleep, or was it turned off?
If it was turned, it wasn't me, but
right. So I mean, that's kind of the question you have to. If the monitor itself was turned off, then it makes sense that the windows for Explorer would have been initialized on that one monitor, and
yeah.
then all of its windows would have come over. Apps will remember, some apps anyways, will remember where they got opened on.
Yeah.
So you just have to make sure that before you log in, that other monitor is up and running, and then the Windows will stay on that monitor.
Okay. From Saeed, I'm writing a file on C Windows System 32 drivers and want to access to write in a file, but I'm not getting it. I've tried to allow for it with the admin, but it's still not allowed. How can I get write access?
Not quite sure exactly from what context he's writing it from,
yeah.
But an elevated CMD should do it.
Okay.
But if you're trying to do it from, say, Notepad, right, you're going to have to elevate Notepad first.
Yeah.
If you're, whatever program it is that you're writing, that you're using to write to, needs to be running with the admin privileges. Just because you have admin privileges associated with your account does not mean that they're currently asserted.
Okay. I'm a Windows user, Windows 7 and 8.1. How can I see it? Somebody has access to my system, and how do I block this? And I mean both scenarios. Some person somehow knows my password and has access to my system directly, not online, and someone connects remotely.
Okay, well, the best way to audit that would be through Event Viewer. Okay, that's a relatively complex question. So we'll go just with the how can I determine who's logged in part. So you go to the Windows log and you go to the security log, and you can actually look at all of the logons, you know, and you can tell which account it was that specifically logged on. You can go to the details, what the SID was. So you can just go through here and see who's logged on, both locally and remotely.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody knows your password, okay, and you're not using any sort of form of two-factor auth, then the computer can't possibly know that it's not you.
Yeah.
Right? If I told Larry my password and he comes over here and he logs in, this thing has no idea that it's not me and him.
Yeah.
So you need some sort of two-factor auth. If you're truly paranoid, I'd say you would need a smart card or some other form of two-factor auth. For logging in remotely, you can set a group policy that actually says deny logon remotely.
Yeah.
Or you must, even remotely, you must have a smart card in order to do the two-factor auth. That's really the only method to say for certain, right? Mm-hmm. You need to have the password and something physical that is associated with you. And as long as that thing that is physical, that's associated with you, cannot, you know, is not loaned out, is not lost, whatever, then you should be fine.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's see here. I have a laptop with Windows 8.1, 64-bit OS. Can I switch off my laptop screen and still run programs in the background? This will cause my laptop to save battery. When any key is pressed, laptop should switch on the screen. So
you can set up a blank screensaver.
You could set up a blank screensaver. I typically just hit Windows L and lock my machine,
yeah, if you
can, and then
if you,
the screen goes off
that's right.
after a minute anyway.
Yeah, and if you're running desktop applications, they'll continue to run.
Yeah.
Store applications will sleep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Often I have such an effect that my mouse cursor slows, like it adheres to the surface of the screen. Mouse is optical, and the surface of the desk is perfect, so it cannot relate with ball dusting. Also... when cursor unfreezes, it catches the distance it forgot to move, so it most probably software problem with operating system. Simultaneously in Task Manager, I can't find any process that can occupy processor or disk resources. The impression is that some program occupies some I/O resource, which is not indicated in Task Manager directly. Is it possible to track the kind of loading somehow?
You're probably getting some sort of interrupt storm. You could use perfmon in order to help determine this. You could have anything from a mouse hook that is installed. A lot of games will install that. I'd kind of take a look at what has happened recently, if this is a new development on your machine.
Yeah.
An errant driver, if you've recently updated your mouse drivers, try rolling them back. If you haven't updated your mouse drivers, try updating them.
Mm-hmm.
If you have third-party mouse drivers installed, you may not need them. Try uninstalling them altogether and letting the inbox drivers take over. But there's unfortunately not enough information to get into a deep analysis.
Yeah, and my thing, and I think I've said this before, check your batteries. Just for the heck of it, switch your batteries out because you never know if it takes batteries.
If it takes batteries.
Yeah, I've got kind of a weird problem at home. I have a really, really old keyboard and mouse. Mm-hmm. It's a Logitech really flat one. I forget what it's called, but it was kind of like a designer one. And the keyboard is draining batteries really quick now. Mm-hmm. And so I'll replace it with like brand new Duracells. And then 2 days later, my keyboard's not working. And mm-hmm. I would troubleshoot it for like 10 minutes. Now I know. I think there's something wrong with my keyboard now. And I don't know, it's like a 15-year-old keyboard. So
I've got an interesting option for you. Do you ever actually take your keyboard off the desk?
Not usually, no.
Okay, here's what I would do. You can get little adapters that would plug into your battery slot.
Yeah.
And then plug that in.
Okay.
Really, really hokey method to keep your keyboard running, assuming, of course, that you love this keyboard.
I like the keyboard a lot.
You know,
yeah.
You can get these adapters. They're cheap. You can make one, really. You just need a transformer. Mm-hmm. And just plug it in. It just becomes a wired keyboard at that point.
Yeah.
Right? You go super cool and go convert it to solar power.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many cool things that you could do with that, assuming, of course, that you want to keep this keyboard.
Yeah, I think the keyboard's just about at the end of its life, and I'll just replace it one. And I bought the Ergo Microsoft desktop, and I liked it so much that I just brought that into work, and I started using it here. So I don't have to get another. All right, pick of the week time. Time for the pick of the week. And Gove, you've got one here for us about encryption, one of our favorite things to talk about.
I've been on a security kick lately. It's one of the many hats that I wear.
Yeah.
Compat and security. It's depending on which side of the bed I wake up on. What am I going to do today?
Yeah.
What do I care about today? There's a blog post by Matt Tomlinson from our TCS, Trustworthy Computing. Talks about improvements in our Outlook.com and OneDrive properties for attempting to keep more traffic encrypted for longer periods of time. And this is just, you know, to better address customers' concerns also showing that we want to be more transparent with our customers. I highly suggest people take a look at this blog, the various TechNet blogs, and we've recently opened the first Microsoft Transparency Center, basically allowing participating governments to ensure that, you know, we're actually doing things the right way.
Yeah.
Take a look. Take a look at the Trustworthy Computing blog. There's a lot of cool information on there. Help keep you guys more informed.
Yeah, and also this week, Brad Smith, Microsoft's lead counsel, had some things to say about the government too. And I won't add to what the good words Brad has said, but it was an interesting read, so check that out too. And then the other pick of the week is Open Game Art. And this, I saw this. This has been needed for a long time. So you might remember a couple years ago I did a project called ScriptTD, which was an open source tower defense game engine for Windows Phone. And after I did that, a lot of developers who downloaded it got back with me and they're like, yeah, this is awesome, but I don't have any art. I can't find any images to use and I'm just not a designer. And I was like, well, you could pair up with, you know, some other designers and stuff like that. And they're like, I don't know any designers. So it was difficult for them to find art that they could use for the project. Open source art for games, here you go. So it's a very cool site. And if you're an artist or a designer, you should contribute to this because it's a great system. And I love that someone's actually started this up.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of indie games start off this way, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know, I like playing, you know, simple platformers.
Yeah.
This stuff to while away the time. There's a ton of indie games that I just like to play because it's simple, right?
And yeah.
You got 10 minutes that you're in a line somewhere and you want to play something simple.
Yeah.
This is actually really cool.
Yeah, or if you just need a placeholder until you actually get art done, this is a good one to start with. All right, that is the show for this week. If you have questions, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com and we will see you next week.